child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doray, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Arnel. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On this program, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. Now, that involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to address each other. Our number is 212-209-2877, and today's topic, we continue our discussion about becoming the most diverse culture the world has ever known, and all the bugs and problems that go with that process. You know, getting there isn't going to be easy. It requires all of us to travel on a road filled with giant craters and landmines. As we try to navigate, we will need to find new ways to speak and to listen to each other. At the heart of this process are some of the issues we touched on last week. Call-outs, virtual signaling, shaming, versus a less adversarial approach known as call-ins. So we're going to talk about call-ins. You were asking me last week, Elaine, what is a call-in?
Yeah.
Maybe you could read us a little bit about that.
Okay. In social justice and communication, calling someone in means addressing their harmful behavior through a private, compassionate conversation rather than shaming them publicly. Now, there's the crux, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this approach is often credited to activist Loretta Ross. Ross herself gives credit to Ngoc Loan Tran. I don't know if I said that right.
That was pretty good. I couldn't do better. It's a Vietnamese name, so it's a little foreign to us.
I hope I got it right.
Yeah.
He's a prominent queer activist and an educator who wrote the influential 2013 essay Calling In, a Less Disposable Way of Holding Each Other Accountable.
Yep. And there are some key differences that distinguish calling out from calling in. Right? For example, calling out usually is like in a public setting, whereas calling in, you're going to privately reach out, maybe a direct message or a phone call, some kind of one-on-one rather than this public exposing of another person.
And so the tone, you said, would be either reactionary, confrontational, shaming.
Yeah, that's with call-outs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Versus calling in, be compassionate, patient, and curious. And the goal is, calling out is immediate accountability, stopping what you see as harm immediately. Calling in, the goal is long-term growth, mutual understanding.
And there's an underlying assumption as well, which is with calling out, you're assuming that the person's is deciding to act in a malicious way, and that's unacceptable. Whereas with calling in, you're kind of giving the person the benefit of the doubt. You're saying, you know, maybe they're not aware of what they're saying. Maybe it's ignorance or a lack of awareness, but maybe they're making a mistake and they don't even know it.
Now, this is a much more kind of gentle approach, leading with curiosity. So instead of making accusations, you ask questions like, what was your intention when you said that? Or how do you think somebody else might see this differently?
Yep. And you're going to focus on the impact of what was said, not necessarily the intent. So you're going to acknowledge that, hey, you might have not meant harm with what you said, but here's how your words landed on me. Here's how I think others heard you. And that can help maintain the relationship. And also, if you make it personal, if you talk about I felt uncomfortable when this happened, rather than putting the person on defensive, you did this, you did that. Just say, this is how what you said made me feel.
Interesting. It's an interesting point that you're focusing on the impact rather than the intention. I think
right.
In so many other cases, we advise people to look to the intention that maybe went wrong.
Right.
The intention was good, but the impact was wrong. But here, by looking at the impact, you're taking it out of the very personal criticism.
Yeah, and I think often, the problem is that we making assumptions about the intention when it's easy to assume a malevolent intent is problematic, because it in this case the intention can easily be misunderstood.
So you kind of put that to one side.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
Just talk about here's how I heard you. You can use call-ins when there's a trusted relationship with the person. You can kind of understand that a mistake was made that was unintentional, and you wanna foster a learning environment. Whereas call-outs would be more when the harm is extreme and you're dealing with a person with a lot more power than you, and to protect others, you really have to intervene. So there are situations that it might be appropriate, to call out, but I think that they're probably very, very particular and limited.
Yeah, that's a. You're asking people to kind of pause and consider before reacting.
Yep.
So considering that those two aspects.
Yeah. Now, to better understand why call-ins, and maybe sometimes, as we said, call-outs, might be necessary, we should take in as fully as possible the enormity this unique and social endeavor of ours involves. So, to become the widely diverse, multicultural society we aspire to be, it's never been attempted before on such a scale. It requires all of us to learn new ways of thinking and behaving. Elaine?
Yeah, I was just thinking, we take for granted and we're kind of honored to be part of this attempt, this undertaking of trying to become diverse and multicultural, when we're amongst others who see that as a problem, as something completely undesirable.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about, some of the backlash against this multicultural movement and diversity movement that really, it's it's a bus that you're not going to turn around. You know, you might slow it down ever so slightly, yeah. But no, this is headed in a direction, and nothing's going to stop it. I mean,
and
it makes
this what you're saying now, this trying to call in rather than call out, a so much better way to involve others or to get them to be part of this.
Yep. You know, in such a dynamic and ever-changing environment, even the best intentioned among us may inadvertently speak in a way that offends. And saying something offensive unintentionally may be the result of ignorance or misunderstanding. And in such a case, is calling someone in the way to go? It probably is. How should we respond? And when you're dealing with somebody who's clearly opposed to and feels threatened by our inexorable journey toward greater diversification, how do we respond to that person? Because that's different than somebody who's just unintentionally, you know, saying something, making a mistake. But, you know, if you've got somebody who is determined to oppose diversity and multiculturalism, how do we deal with that person? Elaine?
Yeah. So the factors that are fueling our country's retreat from it, the drivers of the MAGA authoritarian backlash, include these five elements. The globalization of DNA. Should I keep going?
Just the globalization of DNA is, I mean, this is just a plain and simple fear of the demise of whiteness, right? It's definitely racially motivated.
So that our DNA is likely to be mixed with DNA from all over the world.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful to me.
But there's, you know, there among some people, you know, particularly the MAGA right, there's an assumption that there's something in pure whiteness that's worth preserving and something about non-whiteness that's undesirable. And, you know, that's a tough one to deal with when someone really believes that.
Yeah. I mean, the fear of being displaced is very real.
That's another one, the fear of being displaced.
Yeah. I mean, the white-collar workers have lost ground. The white-collar workers, but also the manual laborers.
Yeah. White-collar and blue-collar absolutely have lost ground, but, you know, rather than blaming immigrants for taking their jobs, what's really going on is billionaires that own all of these industries have saved lots of production costs by offshoring, and that's been going on for 40 years, and more recently, automation. Automating the industrial process has really made very few jobs. When we talk about, you know, reshoring some of these industries, we're talking about a factory that had 500 workers before, now it needs 20.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're still losing 480 jobs. But people who are in the position of losing those job opportunities, they're convinced that it's immigrants that is the problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're wrong.
It could have been so different, or could still be so different, if we all had ownership of these amazing new methods of production.
Yeah, or at least if, you know, there was a progressive enough taxation that we'd all be benefiting as if we did have an ownership stake in it, because we should. Because really, these breakthroughs are the result of every individual that is alive and every individual who ever lived. This is something that humanity has achieved, not just Elon Musk.
Yeah, well said.
There's also acceleration whiplash, which is, you know, the speed that it feels like the floor is moving from under us. So accelerating technological change is affecting the world with increasing rapidity. You know, and for a lot of people, rather than feeling in command as they walk very deliberately toward a future which they're comfortable, it feels to many like the floor is moving out from beneath them, and they're desperately trying to maintain their balance, grasping and clutching at anything they can.
Yeah, and it, you know, we saw it happening in the factories, and now we're seeing it happening in offices.
Yeah, yeah. AI is going to change everything, and robotics have been changing things for decades now, and it's only going to increase. So we're going to have a different approach to getting income into the hands of people that are going to be who we need to contribute to the economy by buying things. And we're gonna have to figure out how we redistribute the incredible productivity that all these technological gains make possible.
Yeah, I don't understand how the people who are hugging the means of communication and limiting the human involvement, who the hell they think their consumers will be.
Yeah.
Who's going to be able to afford the products they produce?
Yeah, exactly. Now, another factor that drives the MAGA right is backlash. So, you know, while you have people who are kind of relating and identifying with their tribal connections and identities, people embracing and celebrating their diverse identities have resulted in big changes in our culture with regard to rules and norms about lifestyle, cultural choices such as relating to gender, sexual consent, gender roles, acceptable humor, and sexual preferences. And to many traditional conservative white Christians, it seems so disorienting that many believe they are under attack.
Yeah, I mean, it's an understandable fear. What seems so odd to me is that they're accepting leadership from people who, we're learning more and more, violate all their actual values and actual identity.
Yes, well, desperate people take desperate actions, and desperation is never a sound basis for political positions, political platforms. Another factor that has driven the MAGA right to be where they are is the cable news and social media environment. So whether we're talking about the early internet with message boards and blogs and vlogs, you remember blogs and vlogs?
Yeah.
Or YouTube videos, or if we're talking about modern social media with news feeds and, you know, Twitter and X and everything else that people communicate on, Instagram, and of course short form video now. The internet, in combination with partisan cable, quote-unquote, news networks, have been a powerful magnifier, making what in the past might have been a much smaller divide between us into an unbridgeable chasm.
Yeah, you combine these factors and you feel a palpable sense of white Christian aggrievement.
Yep.
A major motivator behind the embrace of populist authoritarian movements like MAGA.
We want to hear from you too, listeners. Do you know any MAGA people? Have you struggled with them? Have you tried to figure out a way to communicate with people who are considerably more conservative or have a very different viewpoint than you do? How have you dealt with it? Or maybe someone has approached you in a way that you felt like they reached out effectively. Or maybe you've had the opposite experience where someone's called you out and you really feel like you've been treated unfairly. Has that ever happened to you? Our number is 212-209-2877.
It bothers me that I know that I get so disgusted with people who believe in this current administration and who don't see the wrong in it. But I also know that there are people that I care about who feel very, they feel as if they're being called out. They feel as if they're being shamed, as if they're being treated with disdain and disgust by people like me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's hard. You know, it's you know, you want to feel like you can respect where someone is. And at the same time, when people have these, you know, these attitudes that are so fearful and so, you know, they're reactionary, it's really hard. But, you know, if we're going to become the culture that I think we're moving toward, we're going to have to find an effective way to get there with everyone, with, or at least, you know, a vast majority of people on board. You know, at the same time that some turn to a nostalgic, reimagined, wonderful past when things in America was supposedly right, the rest of us are struggling to create the most diverse and accepting, and I say accepting as opposed to merely tolerating, accepting culture that the world has ever known. Now, a major challenge toward this involves exclusionary behavior. And there are a lot of names for this kind of behavior, but individuals who belong to marginalized groups are likely to experience these behaviors that some refer to as microaggressions. And exclusionary behaviors include a wide range of comments and behaviors that can make members of marginalized groups feel devalued, excluded, condescended to, patronized, and subtly, and sometimes not so subtly, discriminated against. Exclusionary comments and behavior can be made unintentionally, and they can reveal deeply held bias and discriminatory attitudes, which may or may not be conscious. Elaine?
Yeah, I mean, some of the examples, if you think of it, is it a white person telling a black coworker, "I don't even think of you as black," and meaning that to be taken as a compliment.
Right, right. Yeah, boy, yeah. Talk about a backhanded compliment.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And not knowing what they did wrong. They felt they were being warm. Or at a business meeting, a female staff member repeatedly having their comments interrupted or ignored by their male co-workers.
Yep, and that we know that happens a lot.
Yep, or they even adopt what the female person said.
Yeah, and take credit for it.
Yeah, boy, that popped into their head, and they don't know.
Jim, that was a great idea. Don't know where you got it from. Yeah.
And if you speak up, you're the kind of harsh, loud, you know, unacceptable woman.
Yep.
Or say you have a person who's born in America but of Pakistani descent being complimented by a supervisor for their excellent English.
Yep.
Most of these people come with an exceptionally good English education.
Yeah. Or there's the classic image of a white woman in an elevator who tightens the grip on her handbag when a young black man enters the elevator.
Yeah, yeah.
Or how about a male student being teased, "That shirt is so gay," right? So,
And all of this said unwittingly.
Yeah.
Unintentionally.
Absolutely. We have a caller on the line. Let's go to that. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Ed, how are you, man?
I'm good, yourself.
All right. The connection last week and this week has not been so good. I don't know if you could move to a better place where you have where you sound clearer, but it's a little distorted.
Is this a little better?
I think
that's
so.
Better.
Yep, I think
great.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, good afternoon. How you doing? Yeah.
Good, Ed.
Pertaining to your topic, I mean, the type of work that I do or the industry that I work in, there's a lot of quote-unquote good old boys. It's a trade industry, so a lot of it historically has been confined to one group of individuals. So I'm kind of used to it.
Yeah, you must have gotten exposed to those kind of exclusionary behaviors a lot.
Oh, yeah, at a very young age. My father worked in the industry as far as being a mechanic. And, number one for me, I know it sounds like it's being facetious, but I don't look at race. I try not to look at race because race is a construct. It's a social construct that I believe divides people. There's only one race, the human race. We come from different ethnicities, we come from different cultures, and that's the delineation between. But the bottom line is, we're all human. And I come from that aspect, you know what I mean? I know there's prejudice, I know there's institutional racism, but I come from that aspect. And it's a one-on-one thing because people fear what they don't know. And once they know, once you get to know somebody, I mean, I've met people, believe me, that have never seen a black person, that wondered what hair grease was for. And I don't take it as a microaggression. I believe people are too thin-skinned. I mean, you know, the only way we're going to advance is if you got to let some things go. You know, some things are just ignorance. Some things are stupidity.
Yeah. I wish you could bottle whatever it is you have it because we need more of that. I mean, we do have a whole generation of people that are, it seems like many of them are just waiting for the next insult, and ready to jump on it.
Well, it's no way to live. I mean, I'm looking to have a decent quality of life. I'm looking to have people around me that are interested in the same things I am, that want to succeed, that I'm looking for a happy, a pleasant community. You can't get along with everybody. There's over a billion people on this planet, and it's not rational to believe that you're going to like everybody, but you can live with everybody. And you just, for me, the microaggressions and all that stuff, I think is trivial. And, you know, we're all human beings, and we all want to have a quality of life, unless we're insane.
Ed, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Working in this industry for so long, have you ever said to somebody in this nice, friendly, easygoing way of yours, hey man, what you just said is kind of ignorant, or that seemed a little wrongheaded,
or that made me feel weird, or something like that?
I've addressed that. Believe me, I've heard some comments that when I was younger, I might want to take your head off. you gotta control yourself, you know what I mean? But as I get older, I take it more on the cuff, but it's a process. And I've heard people say things that they didn't think were offensive, or that it was just, I worked with one guy, his name was Joe, and he was just coming and saying, Joe, what are you talking about, man? Do you realize what you're saying? Sometimes he didn't really know. It wasn't until he saw me as a human being, as an equal, then he realized, hey, should I be? And we would have conversations like that.
So you were able to reach Joe in a way that he heard you, huh?
Yeah, well, we worked together. It's just what you.
That's
you
great. That's true calling in. That's calling in instead of calling out.
Yeah. Well, you got to realize you don't know what you don't know. You understand what I'm saying? Until you know it. And these people, working with him, working with other people, they didn't realize that. When you enclose, that's the problem, I believe, the biggest problem today. There's so much information, but when you enclose yourself in your own bubble, that's all you see. You got to be big enough to get outside of your own universe. And then once you start to see, you know, he's a dude just like me. And he feels the same way. I see him every day. We go to work, we eat lunch, you know.
You sound like you've been navigating these waters, you know, very adroitly. And I wish we had more people like you, Ed, because that's what we need to move forward.
Well, it took time, dude. Believe me, we talked before, and it took time. It took time.
Yeah.
Growth is hard. Growth is hard. You know, you gotta want to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
That's a great way of putting it. Growth is hard. You've got to get out of your own way.
Like that.
Sums it up exactly.
Ed, thanks for the call. Keep call us again. Talk to you soon. And Elaine, I think we have someone else on the line. Why don't you take that?
Okay, this is WBAI. Where are you called? Sorry, you're on the air. And where are you calling from? And what's your name?
This is John from New Jersey.
Hi, John. Hi, from New Jersey. Hey. Sorry about that. Garbled welcome.
Hey, that's okay. It's one thing for, like, racism, where, like, you come from a nationality, from a nation, where you can go and look at the nation and determine the people and everything else, what they kind of are about and everything. But when you have certain religions and religions in general, now you got people of mixed colors, supposedly of mixed colors, and how you don't know what they really believe in because there's so many splinters and so many factions. You don't know their religion. Bada bing, bada boom. You say, you know, they're always crying about racism, but they have a word in their Bible saying goyim. Now that they have a racist Bible, but they say they're not racist. You know, and then they have, and the same with Muslims. They have a kind of racist Bible too. If you're not Muslim, you're kind of not a person. You're a dog either way. So we have two religions that make you a dog if you don't believe in them. And Christianity does something similar like that, but not quite so harsh. We're getting to a point where there's actual demons in the world eating children. We're going to have to make a decision.
John, look, don't you think that there's a range in, you know, in these religions and in many, many cultures, there's a range of people that some people are very, very prejudiced and very, very bigoted and biased and destructive. And there are other people who see past all those distinctions and they want to reach out.
You can reach out all you want, but if your Bible says to be racist and to hate other people because they don't come from your race, your race, your Bible, your religion is racist. Your religion is a warlike thing. Because your religion says it's a warlike thing. It doesn't hide it.
Yeah, but you know, there are plenty of people who read that same Bible that get the opposite message. So, you know, you've got people who are defending, like, children of Ham and how slavery should, you know, is supported by the Bible. And then you've got other people that say, no, this is about, you know, the rich man has no chance of entering heaven. And, you know, this is all about the poor. People get very different interpretations from the same material.
But you can't say I'm racist and say I'm not racist. You can't say I swear to being a racist and then say I'm not racist. All you are racist. Understand? If you have a word for people that are not your species, if you are above everybody else, you're a racist. You're a Nazi. If God told you that you're to take over the world, you're a Nazi.
Yeah. John, thank you. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. And, Elaine, we're going to do a program soon, one of these upcoming weeks, on how differently you can interpret these religious texts and how people get really different things out of it.
And there's also the difference between the religious texts and the culture of the groups. I mean, John's absolutely right. There's some terrible words used that are discriminatory. They're not part of the fundamental teaching.
Yeah. I mean, look, you have people who are talk about Catholics who talk about liberation theology. You've got Jim Wallace, who started Sojourners, which, you know, advocates for the marginalized people. You've got Reverend William Barber, who, you know, just did a march for poor and for immigrants and for, you know, to protest all the things that are happening in our country. You've got good people who are doing good works, and they say they're inspired by these religious texts.
Yeah. In every group, there are people who are showing this bigotry and people who are showing the exact opposite, as you say, based on the same roots.
Yeah. But what we're going to talk about when we do go and dive into this subject is how long-term change, however, while you know, a progressive interpretation of religious texts can inspire leadership that's progressive, for the argument for long-term sustainable change, that you need something else. That you have to go beyond the judgmental texts and the attribution of people's free will and the assumption of people's antisocial nature, all that. You have to go beyond that.
To a core philosophy that will keep you.
Yeah, exactly.
out of the ditches.
Yep. We've got another caller on the line. Elaine, why don't you take that?
Sure. This is WBAI. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello. Yes. You hear me?
Hi. Yes, clearly. Thank you.
First of all, before I say anything, I thank you for allowing me to speak on your program.
Thank you for calling in. What's your name? What can we call you?
Long Island.
You're calling from Long Island, and what is your name?
Mel.
L.
Gotcha.
L.
L from Long Island. Gotcha.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay. I would like to say, very interesting, I heard your program not from the very beginning, but the gentleman who was speaking in regards to, I would parallel it with Rodney King when he said, can't we all get along together? The religious part, you know, religion is what man believes, because it gives then the foundation of saying that they are correct in certain things that they do because they are following the principles of. Now, when I look at the United States that you know, is happening right now, I know that the things that are happening rather, I know that it's in a turmoil. So would it's not basically religion, the religious, because I've seen people pray to the water, pray to the rock, pray to the air, pray to the fire. Okay, and that's what they believe in. But when man takes it upon himself to elevate himself to a position where he is not praying to that which he believes represents his God or his deity, but he is praying to a man or himself. He's making himself a god.
L, have you experienced, you know, discriminatory behavior? Have you interacted with anyone who was coming from that place where you felt like you were able to communicate?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I have engaged in a lot of people with many who, in essence, they don't like me because of my political stance and the way in which I view certain things. That's why I thank you for allowing me to speak on your program.
Yeah.
Elle, you have such a beautiful way of speaking and such a gentle delivery. I should imagine people at least want to listen to you.
Well, you know, there are some, but it's not... It's the content of what I say. I say that upset people. For example, I'll tell you that I have called in the past, I've called on BAI, And I've had people come to my house. They were so outraged with what I said.
Did you leave your address?
I didn't give my address.
That's pretty scary. That's pretty scary.
Listen, that's only half the thing, but it makes a person such as myself stronger.
Yeah.
Why? Because you see,
that's the great reaction.
In order to make the world think and be as one, then you have to stand. And sometimes people will knock you down, but you have to get back up.
Yep, absolutely. Elle, we actually have to take another call, but thank you so much. Appreciate your contribution. And we have another call on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yeah, hey.
Hi, this is Crystal from Manhattan.
Hey, Crystal. How are you?
Hi, Crystal.
I'm doing pretty good. Elle came in real, real low. I couldn't hear anything she said.
Yeah, it was kind of low.
Oh,
but,
that's a pity.
Arnan and, I always forget your co-worker's name. Elaine.
Elaine and Arnell, Crystal.
Elaine and Arnell. So,
hi.
Hi, how are you? So, first of all, let's be clear. No one should ever put their hands on anybody because they don't agree with their lifestyle. We have to make that very clear in society. If you are out of control, and you know, you hear these stories about, he killed the transgender because he found out she wasn't a woman, and he chopped up the itty bitty pieces. All this craziness because you think you have to prove your manhood. Oh, I'm a man, and you weren't a woman. Oh no, I have to take you off the planet, and they lose their mind and what have you. If you are that out of control, hopefully you know you like that before you even get with anybody. So we have to make that very... I'm only bringing that point out, trying to make it very clear, because nobody has the right to put their hand on nobody.
Yeah, and we aren't talking about that as much as we're talking about the kind of things that, you know, kind of just... They're like 1,000 paper cuts. You know, the exclusionary behaviors we're talking about are like much more subtle things. It's not anybody putting their hands on someone, but it's hurtful.
I only brought that out because the point I'm trying to make is you have to stand firm in what you believe. Me personally, transgenderism, I thank God I don't have that issue. Because unfortunately, we're born into a society where a girl is a girl and a boy is a boy. I'm been born in the late 50s, early 60s. So we didn't have a whole lot of colors. You had brown, you had black, you had white, maybe gray. You didn't have all these translucents and all this kind of stuff that was going on. I mean, that's going on now. So we have to be, Arnett, we have to be considerate of people who find a lot of things that they're not ordinary. We have to consider them as well. Everybody nowadays wants you to go along with what they believe and how they think. Oh, you have to go along, and if you don't love me, you couldn't love me if you don't agree with my lifestyle and all this kind of stuff. Well, newsflash, we don't have to go along with anything, and we have to be strong enough to stand firm in what we believe. And also realize that, you know what? Birds of a feather flock together. I don't have to deal with you if I don't have to compromise how I feel to make you happy or to feel that we're all going to have a kumbaya moment.
Right.
We
got to
stop doing that.
Yeah.
Keep your hands to yourself, but also stand firm in what you believe. You can't compromise all the time.
Yep, absolutely. Crystal, you know, I'm going to play a clip now. I want to play a clip that we want to fit in before the end of our program on the woman who is often credited with calling in culture, making people aware of this, Loretta J. Ross. Don't know if you ever heard of her, but hang on, and we're going to play that clip, and we'll hope to hear from you again soon, okay?
Bye.
All right, Crystal. All right, yeah, let's play that clip by Loretta J. Ross.
I really want to build a culture and a world that invites people in instead of pushing them out is called a calling in culture. My friend Dazon Dixon Jallo, who's a very smart woman, says that she believes that calling in will be to this digital age human rights movement in the 21st century what nonviolence was to the civil rights movement in the 20th century. A new way to understand how to truly achieve justice. It's not a matter of what we do, but how we do it. Now, all of us know what calling out is. Our cancel culture, as it's called. You think somebody has done something wrong, you think they should be held accountable for it, and you think they should be punished for it. So one of those calling out examples is, I can't believe you just said that. You're racist, sexist, toxic, manipulative. With this approach, you've guaranteed one thing. With this blaming and shaming, you just invited them to a fight, not a conversation, because you're publicly humiliating them. And if you're unlucky enough to have something that you've regretted captured on cell phone or in a tweet, you're walking around with an unexploded gotcha bomb just waiting to blow up your life or your career or your reputation. I guess I need to ask, how many of us here have done something in our past that could come back to haunt us? One of my students once said, a call out is not an invitation for growth. It's the expectation that you've already grown. This is the culture we're trapped in now. On the other hand, there is calling in. Calling in is a phrase invented by Lone Tran. And basically, a call in is a call out done with love. So when you think somebody has done something wrong and you want to hold them accountable, you don't react with anger or hate. You just remain calm and look at them and say, and you can do this online and in person too, but you just look at them calmly and you tell them, that's an interesting viewpoint. Tell me more. With that, you've invited them into a conversation instead of a fight. And you don't have to agree with somebody to offer them loving attention. All you're admitting at that moment is that there's a possibility that they're as complicated as you are. And everybody deserves to be heard and to be respected. And if you use this call-in practices like I'm teaching, what you'll do is several things. First of all, you'll lead with love instead of anger and allow somebody else to grow. Secondly, it'll affirm your own inner empathy and your compassion. And you'll feel so good about yourself when you learn that you can grow too in embracing and inviting more people into the world. And then the third thing is that you can call in your friends, your families, your neighbors, your coworkers, all the people you might have given up on in the past because of how they've hurt you. So I invite you to join me in this calling in culture, this calling in world that we're building. I think you will have a lot of joy and satisfaction in it, like I've found. We don't actually risk anything because all we risk losing is our pain. And then you'll learn the most powerful lesson I've learned from 5 decades of being a social justice activist. Fighting hate should be fun. It's being a hater that sucks. Thank y'all.
That was really charming.
Yes, she's great, isn't she?
Oh, she's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a whole YouTube video of her doing that talk. And
tell me her name again.
Loretta J. Ross, R-O-S-S. And if you just if you just YouTube search her name and possibly the phrase call in as well, she'll come up. And that's a very worthwhile. The whole thing's about 20-something minutes. Absolutely worth catching. We have just a few minutes left. Maybe we could fit in one more call. Our number is 212-209-2877. And we are talking about call outs and call ins. So give us a call if you've been listening, if you have any opinions about this. We got some interesting calls today, Elaine, didn't we?
We did, and I have a feeling that people are listening in with all sorts of thoughts going on in their own heads, because there's so much that this topic can trigger.
Yeah.
We want to stop people who we see doing damage, and at the same time, who are we to claim that we know the answers?
Yeah. One thing that I think we should acknowledge is that even things that might seem to one person like no big deal, like Ed was talking about, you know, you got to be thicker skinned, you can't be thin skinned, and while that's true, at the same time, you know, continuing on with the skin analogy, it's like a paper cut. You know, it's a paper cut's nothing, but 1,000 paper cuts.
Oh, even, you know, one hurts.
Yeah, one can hurt, but you know, you can deal with it. But you know, people who are sensitive to some of the exclusionary behaviors and things that are said, like the ones we listed before we took our calls, those hurt, and they are cumulative. So it's not like one thing happens and then, you know, you don't have to deal with it ever again. It's like some people, you know, are going to encounter that wherever they go. You know, if you're a dark-skinned Pakistani man, you're probably getting all kinds of stuff wherever you go. You know, if you're a black man in America, you're getting all kinds of stuff every single day.
Yeah.
You know, it...
And not necessarily from the other color people. Sometimes from all shades of people share those societal prejudices or the cliches that the society lets people get away with.
Yeah. Our culture still hasn't changed sufficiently so that it, you know, that the culture leads people away from those mindsets. I mean, in some places it has, but it's a big country and there are lots of places where it hasn't. And, you know, we have to figure out how we get there, because we're going there, you know, no matter how many of us are kicking and screaming, we're going there, you know.
You look at the crowds marching in Minneapolis and you see the shades, the colors, and you see, and the same with George Floyd, the people marching were a mixture of people, and you look, there's the hope.
Yep.
Where everybody feels for the others, want to champion this ideal.
Yep, absolutely. And we really should start wrapping up. If you want to support this show, you can go to buddy.wbai.org and please give us some support. You could become a monthly donor for as little as $5 a month even. So if you can do that, we very much appreciate it. And I think we have to go. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's look at call-out culture, virtue signaling, and shaming. I'm Arnell DeRay, and joining me today was Elaine Durbach. Thank you, Elaine.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on with you.
Thank you. Also, thanks to our intrepid engineer, Red Johnson, and to Hella Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. and stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.
His welfare is my concern.